Yes, good morning. This is the July 9th, 2026 special security meeting, special because it's on a alternate date. John Merchant present. Linda Butler is not here today. Call the meeting to order. Item two is comments from the public. Do we have any comments from the public?
I do not have any.
Okay. That said, we will move on to the security report. Mr. Brandon.
Good morning. All right. So currently the operating levels, we have 7 full-time gate officers, 6 part-time gate officers, 2 full-time patrol officers with 15 employees total, including 4 probationary employees. A&D Gates continues working to repair the damaged North Gate hardware. Replacement parts have been ordered and repairs have been ongoing throughout the month. An estimated completion day has not yet been provided. Security Supervisor Brandon Areno, Security Patrol Officer Vitaly Perelka, and Gate Officer David Labrado attended a California Department of Fish and Wildlife training seminar and received certificates of completion in watercraft inspection and decontamination. The training focused on the identification, prevention, and management of aquatic invasive species, AIS for short, enhancing the department's ability to support environmental protection efforts within the community. As far as the RMA Association and coordination, me and Chris looked at various gate entry systems and demoed 2 other ones. So now we got a total of 3 that we could put together and go with the best one that we think that would fit our community here, and that would be within our current operating budget. We also coordinated plans for the 4th of July and brought together an action plan. And under staff comments is when I'll comment about the 4th of July and how that went. As far as everything else goes, on my incidents and notes, on June 15th, 2026, CSD security responded to a report of an unattended juvenile approximately 6 years of age at Riverview Park. Upon arrival, Security Supervisor Brandon Areno located the child at the park bus stop. Initial attempts to identify the juvenile through verbal communication were unsuccessful due to the child's limited ability to provide identifying information. Security personnel canvassed the area and coordinated with a community member familiar with local families, which led to the identification of the child's residence. Security Supervisor Areno contacted the child's mother, who responded to the location, and the juvenile was safely reunited with her without incident. The child was found to be unharmed and no further action was required. Pretty much with that day we got a call about a juvenile at the park bus stop, and he was unable to communicate. There was there was reasons for that,
special
needs child, and just people walking by just asking, hey, do you know this child? And one of them said that they knew a church member, and the church member was dealing with special needs children, and she said, I probably know his parent. And she said, send me a picture of him. We sent her a picture of him. Oh, yes, that's so-and-so. So we were able to locate the house, and the mother was asleep. The child was able to escape through the...
Escape might not be the right word.
Well, he let himself out. Yeah, he let himself out through the garage door while his mom was asleep.
Okay.
So, and I noticed when I got there that she had a flat tire. So, and luckily it was right down, Riverview Park. Was like, look, hey, do you need a ride? I'll take you to your child. And Chris was over there waiting with the child, and as far as the other bystanders as well. So it took a little bit of investigations, and I told her about the Bring Me Safe program that we had started. And she's like, oh my gosh, that's actually a good thing. Can I please sign up? So we got another person signing up, and it's starting to make way throughout the community. So it's a... I feel like that program is going to do us some good with incidents like this, so we can get these people home safer and faster.
With the great job, man, for sure on that.
Thank you, and I appreciate your assistance as well. But that was the main incident in June. Other than that, it was operations as usual. We still got high numbers of gate entries. In the month alone, the visitor gate's gone up 12,407 times.
Yeah, and yeah, 11,000 of those were on the 4th of July, probably.
Yeah, probably. Okay. Refused entries. It's mainly the problem that we're having is vendors coming before the work hour starts, before the 7 a.m. We're constantly having to remind them to go park across the street and just wait until 7 a.m. to go by the community rules. So with the attendance of the aquatic invasive species, basically summarized into a report. I'll go ahead and start with that as well.
Oh, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Okay, so you were talking about the repairs to the north gate. Now, I have to assume that those are the actual gatehouse.
No. The arm is responsible for the gatehouse.
I'm sorry, but those are the gate arms at the gatehouse.
Yeah, the hardware.
Can we have an update about that gate arm that goes left onto Lago?
Yeah, the quote that you just signed the other day,
yeah,
it's to replace that part of it.
Yeah.
The mechanism was missing, so they were able to, they fixed the barcode reader so far.
Okay.
So now it'll be able to read barcodes. Now all they're waiting on is for the actual arm and the mechanical mechanism that holds the arm in place.
And so that's the one that goes
the
straight,
parkway.
That turns left.
Yeah, the parkway left.
And then I understand, then there's the one that's actually after you've turned left on Lago. Is that working?
Yes, that's working.
And then the exit gate there, is that working yet?
Yes, that's all working.
This is the entrance, this is the exit.
That Lago gate, it honestly has intermittent problems, I'm noticing, and I think it has to do a lot with the sun hitting the barcode reader and, you know, the way the sunlight hits. I've told them about it.
Told who?
The A&D gates. About it, and I mean, every time they come out, they don't find too much of a problem with it. They did suggest that maybe it does require wiring that needs to be replaced in it, and they, I guess, had a quote for it before my tenure here, and it was pretty pricey because they were gonna have to lay some type of cable through, you know, dig up concrete and stuff like that.
But
I don't know if it ever got approved or if the, you know, anything like that. So for right now, I don't see too much of a problem with it. I would probably just wait until we could figure it out. As far as right now, it works.
Perfect. Thank you.
But yeah, the we're just waiting on that visit. Like, the main thing is that visitor lane. We're having to reset the scanner every so often. The laser that goes across that closes the gate mechanism, because from the vehicle that crashed into it, it basically made it loose, so every time the gate arm opens up, the box shakes and it moves all those parts around. We're having problems with it staying open every now and then. So but all that work's been approved and just waiting for the company to actually come out here and, you know, do the work.
Is that box being replaced by the owner?
By the owner.
Because the accident, he hit that box.
It wasn't the owner
of that car.
We don't have his insurance. Our insurance is paying for it, since the guy had no insurance. So.
But in that adjustment for the insurance company, and our insurance is paying, but they're paying because we pay them.
Right.
You know, I would see what you can squeeze out of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it was loose. Because, you know, he turned upside down on top of it.
Yeah, exactly.
so maybe there's some, you guys work that, and I don't know who's doing what with the insurance. And is it RMA's insurance or
our insurance is going to cover the gate arms and the mechanics of the gate arm. And the way the insurance works is we send over the claim. We have $1,000 deductible on these kinds of claims, and they reimburse us less $1,000, and then they own it. So they're going to go after his insurance. If he doesn't have insurance, they're going to go after any property that he might have, right?
Right.
So GSRMA takes care of all of that.
Okay, good. Okay.
Okay, we'll start with the AIS training report. So June 30th to July 1st, 2026, members of Rancho Mirada CSD Department attended a California Department of Fish and Wildlife training focused on aquatic invasive species, water inspection, and decontamination. The training provided valuable education to protecting California's lakes, rivers, and reservoirs from invasive species that threaten water quality, recreation, native ecosystems, and public infrastructure. Aquatic invasive species are non-native plants and animals that can spread rapidly once introduced into a new water body species, such as golden mussels, quagga mussels, zebra mussels, Eurasian water milfoil, hydrilla, and other invasive aquatic vegetation can clog water intake systems, damage boats and docks, reduce water flow, degrade fish habitat, and significantly increase maintenance costs for public agencies and private property owners. Once established, these species are extremely difficult and expensive to eradicate, making prevention the most effective management strategy. A major focus of the training was understanding how invasive species are commonly transported between waterways, boats, trailers, anchors, propellers, live wells, ballast, tanks, fishing equipment, and other recreational gear can carry microscopic larvae, plant fragments, and standing water capable of introducing invasive species into previously unaffected lakes. To reduce the risk, the Department of Fish and Wildlife promotes the clean, drain, and dry approach. Clean all boats, trailers, and equipment by removing mud, plants, animals, and debris before leaving a body of water. Drain all water from bilges, ballast tanks, live wells, motors, and any other compartment before transport. Dry boats and equipment completely before launching in another body of water, allowing sufficient drying time to eliminate any remaining invasive organisms. The training also included instruction on proper watercraft inspection procedures, identifying high-risk vessels, recognizing signs of invasive species, and performing decontamination using hot water systems when necessary. These inspections are an important tool for preventing the spread of invasive species between waterways. This training is particularly relevant to Rancho Marietta due to our community's lakes and recreational boating opportunities. Protecting these waters' resources helps preserve water quality, fish and wildlife habitat, recreational use, and the long-term health of our local environment. By completing this training, RMCSD security personnel have enhanced their knowledge of aquatic invasive species and best practices for watercraft inspection and decontamination. This information will allow the department to assist in future educational efforts, support district and association initiatives related to lake management, and help promote responsible boating practices within our community. Protecting our lakes is a shared responsibility. Through education, prevention, and community awareness, we can help ensure Rancho Marietta's waterways remain healthy and enjoyable for future generations. That pretty much wraps that up.
Cool. We're gonna move to the security meeting update, and just for a minute, with considering the invasive species issue, we can kind of start there, and then we'll wind around to the beginning of what I was going to use anyway.
Okay.
One of the things that occurs to me that when you guys meet, you want to talk about is, in terms of enforcement, and in this particular situation, it's really relevant, is you now have a blend of different homeowners associations for which you govern CC&Rs for one, but not for another. And I'm not sure how that fits in with the ability to enforce this policy. For example, and I'll tell you in a minute where I'm going with this. Part of what we've talked about, and we're going all over the map, but there's no other way to do this, is you know, we've talked about reconciling the fact that we own the North Gate and RMA owns the South Gate. Yes? Yeah. Right. Vice versa. And to accommodate that by moving all the assets from the district to the association, we have to consider a way that we reconcile that, because we can't just give you a present, because that's a gift to public funds. So we had discussed briefly the ability of, rather than using money for a transaction of this type, and this has to be exercised legally as we go forward, we might consider a swap. And one of the things we talked about using in that asset base was the lakes themselves. back in the 1970s, RMA was created well in advance of when the district was created. RMA was in business out here in 78 and 79. The district wasn't formed until 1984. So consequently, the property on which our reservoirs reside belongs to the RMA. We govern that with an easement to access the water and to control the water that's in there. But in terms of, for example, enforcing this policy and the fact that, you know where I'm going here, the fact that part of this is not controlled by your CC&Rs, we still have an inherent right of enforcement, above security even, on our own property. So if that property in this transfer were to wind up, you know, from the bottom of the lakes to the waterline, being owned by the CSD, it would make enforcement of water-related policies easier if the district could maintain some level of enforcement to strictly protect its own assets. I don't know completely how that all fits together, but it's part of what, when we meet together, we should all talk about, because that's one of the main issues that you guys are working on. Somebody now is, they've divided up the tasks, you know, in different people are doing stuff, and people have been calling me and calling Amelia, which is fine. And we've been approached now on the asset movement or asset purchase or asset swap, however that might come about. We've provided, Brent gave me one of the fellows that's working on that committee was in charge of the scheduling, which we've now provided. I gave him the scheduling yesterday or day before as to what the ideal schedule is and where we are now. There's three or four different components. I know Jim Moore, longtime RMA president and federal auditor in his working days, is working on a lot of the financial aspects of what's going on here. So we're going to have to sit down and get all this together. But that was one thing that came to my mind when we first started talking about this invasive species thing, because I think it's something we've been talking about it for years, but it's something that we really are going to have to rigorously enforce.
And I back you 100%. And it's actually not as complicated as you would think to get adjudication for those violations, because once those other HOAs get established and get their own compliance department, then we can start finding their HOAs as well as they're finding our people. We just have to have one compliance department that has all HOAs, each member of their compliance departments in that compliance department.
Yeah.
And then we're able to get adjudications for the violations and stuff like that.
Yeah, but I would think though that part of the issue, and I've been here long enough that, you know, I know when we were not a majority on the RMA board, when the developer controlled the RMA board, that you're going to be a long time coming to where, you know, you get past that. For example, in the retreats, which is blended to the villages that are still in the application stage, that homeowners association has like 74 votes from the residents and 561 votes from the developer, so they win. But anyway, it's just part of what we're working on here. I'm going to back up. We did about a year, 4 months, year and a half ago. We did an analysis that I gave to Rod when they questioned our ability to deal with the security tax. The security tax is controlled by 1997 Measure J. It's limited to a 2% increase a year. We have blown through that money over the past 25 years. And we no longer have the resources to keep up with security that is controlled by Prop 218 and the tax. So we have to, if we wind up coming to a collective decision that we're going to transfer security to RMA, we have to have a legal way of either abolishing the tax, going to LAFCO, and relinquishing our authority for security, or coming to a point where the tax is maintained, and it's maintained geographically within the community. For example, what we do with security will not be the same for RMA as it is for the stuff that's on the other side of the highway. So that we needed the ability to lower the tax to zero in some geographical areas and do something else with the tax in the areas outside, and or just lower the tax to zero and then, as would be required later on, go into a vote where we abolish it. And we would not go for that vote until such time as we had everything else where everybody wants it. So because you have three lawyers on your board, Chris asked me if we would vet that and pseudo convince them that what Patrick, our attorney, had said was exactly what we were legally allowed to do. So I agreed to do that. Amelia put that agreement out, and I told Chris I would put that agreement out, and to avoid vetting it inside Patrick's law firm, you know, it's kind of quirky to have one of his partners evaluate his work. We put it with the firm that originally has been with us forever, which is BKS, their associate, who is working with Jennifer, who's our water attorney, is going to review that for us. I don't think we have a problem because we're below the $5,000 limit.
Sure. And so Patrick's okay with
it. Yeah, and we checked it with Patrick, and he's fine with us vetting it. So we'll have that as well going forward. The other thing that is complicated and is going to take some time is we have to understand our PERS liability going forward. You know, if we transfer or release employees and vested employees versus non-vested, we don't know if there is an unfunded liability issue that we have to compensate for. So Amelia's working on that. And Chris and I kind of talked about, and the reason I'm communicating this, I wanted to get this all into the record, just to, so everybody's updated on where we really are. We were talking about a schedule that would be somewhat aggressive, in that he's trying to move fairly soon into public outreach and hold meetings, so that we can test the flavor of the community on where they are with all of this. And there's two issues really here. One is the inside the gate issue, which is an issue unto itself. And depending on what happens with that, whether that be nothing or everything, the impact of that on the rest of the community and how we deal with security on the other side of the road. So the minute we get to that point, what I envision we're going to have to do is round up our own board, you know, and present this collective information and get a consensus on what the board wants to do. The board has previously authorized us to send you the letter that we sent, you know, that was authorizing the contact, and that we would move forward with the discussions on the actual transfer itself. So we've gotten that far, but at some point we're going to take some votes on some stuff. I'm not even sure yet completely what all that stuff will be, but so that's kind of where the process is. And I just wanted to make sure everybody understood that, because Chris and I both agreed that we want to take this forward with, you know, complete accountability and complete transparency so that everybody knows what we're doing. We don't want to wake up one day and say, hey, guess what? Security's moving over there. So, are you, anything you want to add, or are you?
No, we're moving along. I'm going to meet with some of the committee over at RMA to talk about the gate and transferring it and how we'll look at that for the South Gate. There, you're in the North Gate and the land underneath it. We have the South Gate and the land underneath that. The trucks, we're working on the trucks, and then there's just uniforms and not much equipment.
Yeah, there's not a lot beyond what you could categorize really as an asset sale. Mm-hmm. You know, anything we got in a loose leaf book we can give you and say, you know, this is our policy and this is what we do. whether you're going to want to do it that way or not do it that way is kind of the reason that we're having this discussion to begin with. The other point.
I have talked to the union about it because our staff is represented by OE3, and she said it will be up to the employees if they, I don't know, do you have a union?
Only maintenance does.
Only maintenance. Anyway, so if the employees decide that they want to continue having a union and union representation, that's up to that group of employees.
Mm-hmm. It's the same union as well.
OE3? Yeah. It would be up to them. I didn't realize that
yeah,
they could pick and choose different departments, but
yeah, all of the progression through the years of the union association with the district has come as a result of OE3
being in the neighborhood,
plowing the land and making the community in the 1970s.
So there's
synergy through all of that with the country club and with RMA and with CSD.
So that's the only other thing, and I've informed them that there's the potential for a change. There's potential for not a change, but it could happen.
And the other thing we've talked about as it related to technology was if we're on a fast track to make a decision here, I think it's less critical for us to immediately pick a system. I think we ought to continue to work collaboratively to understand what's out there, and you guys have already been through a lot of that. You've been to the conventions and seen the stuff demonstrated and everything else. But I've been saying this for 30 years. When you look at the number of lifts that we make on an annual basis, I mean, I think we're competitive with the Pentagon. Okay? And probably they have a system and we don't. Okay? And there's two things going on here. Number one is everybody is in agreement that there are definitely things that technology will assist us in minimizing the impact of that many lifts. But the other part of that, and Chris and I talked about this, was the fact that the public has to be completely aware of what's in front of us, and the public has to have some form of buy-in as to what happens at 2:00 in the morning when DoorDash shows up at the front gate. Okay? And you will get, trust me, you know, for all the years that I've lived here, you're going to get a whole bunch of opinions on that. I mean, there is no common denominator here that everybody's going, oh, that's a great idea. You're not going to get that. So that's part of the vetting process. But the other part of it that kind of goes hand in hand with administration and enforcement is that we're nowhere near the end of the road in terms of the number of cars and trucks and Amazon deliveries and everything else that we're going to have to support. I mean, Kyle's up there building 195 houses. There's 561 houses on pending applications that, depending on where the water goes, may or may not get built. But you could be talking, and it's compounded by the discussions we're having now on emergency evacuation, which are going to be a key part of the 561 units, because that's showing up big time for the first time in the EIR. I mean, that's really going to be a consideration, because those guys down there, you know Paradise, and they know Maui, and they know Los Angeles, and, you know, they don't want that. So that's kind of where we are. And, you know, I just wanted to use that. The reason I wanted to have this meeting is I just wanted to put that out there. And, you know, I'll talk to Chris, and he can, we have, this will be on the tape, you know, so he can listen to it, just to make sure we're all on the same page. And if we're going and, you know, if we're making a left turn when we should be making a right turn, we need to get together and talk about it. Because I promised him we would give him everything he needed, and we're doing that, and we would give him all of the personnel support from inside CSD that we needed to see if this makes sense for RMA and for us. So that's kind of it. That's the end of my story.
Okay. Good story. Good cast of characters, plot.
Yeah.
It thickens, exactly. There's a climax there in me.
Just, one last thing, because I was here. RMA started out in complete control of security in the late 1970s. And there was a brouhaha with the pension trust fund and the operating engineers who funded this out of their pension resources as a retirement community for the guys that drive the bulldozers. And there was a fight over security fees that at the time related specifically to what RMA charged security to the OE3 for undeveloped property. And we're talking about a point where, you know, 80% of Rancho Murrieta was undeveloped. The South didn't exist. Anything beyond Unit 1, Unit 2, and a smattering in Unit 3 didn't exist. So they got into a fight, and the pension trust fund basically said, screw you, we ain't paying. And you know, RMA is in a position where, from an enforcement standpoint, there was not anything realistically that they could do. File a lawsuit, chase them around for 2 years, spend a bunch of money trying to enforce that. So somebody, John Sullivan was part of this decision, decided that the best thing we could do is we could transfer security from RMA to CSD. And the reason they would do that is because if we got into the same or a similar type of brouhaha, CSD was in a position where if they didn't pay, we could turn off their water. So, and we're a public agency. We have a different, you know, a different set of rules and a different set of leverage that we could exercise that the association can't. So this started over there, and it got over here, and what I've communicated personally, my opinion is, to Chris and to Rod and everybody else, was I think it's important for us to be able to focus on the mega problems we have running a public utility, okay? We take care of water, we take care of sewer, we take care of wastewater, we take care of drainage. And oh yeah, we take care of garbage, waste management. So, you know, there, security is complex, and it eats up a fair amount of management time that is better applied to whatever the real key problems are in front of us. So that's why I think this is a worthwhile project. So that's kind of another piece of the puzzle. But that ties into the enforcement thing too. That's something we all need to understand is, you know, I think it's really critical that we be able to prevent, you know, that invasive species, those mussels, from reaching our reservoirs. And we've been harping on that for 20 years. And now we have the resources that Brendan's.
I agree.
So we're going to have to figure out, and I think it makes sense for us to be able inherently to protect those assets. So if that transfer is workable or doable, then I would really like to explore that.
Great.
Anything further?
I just got a few questions.
Sure.
And comments also after my questions. So with like the transfer of everything, you know, from security to RMA, like thinking about that, to me it would make sense for them to take over, you know, the gates. And what about keeping some staff here, you know, under CSD security, and use that budget for to protect our waterways and to protect the across the street stuff, you know, and still do the security thing for the taxpayers?
Yeah, no, I don't disagree at all with that, and I think we're not far enough along yet to refine that. But I agree that there are some key pieces of the puzzle that we need to tune into. You know, we have a $15 million water plant sitting down there and a water plant right next to it. So we got $20 or $25 million worth of assets sitting down there with a barbed wire fence in the middle of nowhere. Okay.
Yeah.
We've got resources behind us. And particularly, yes, and the reservoirs and the patrols and the protection of the water quality and the water supply are all things inherently that we are legally sanctioned by LAFCO to do.
Right.
And, yeah, that needs to be part of the discussion. I wholeheartedly agree with that. Yeah. So
when I think about the budget at hand, if we were to get rid of the gates and give that over to RMA, that's where a majority of your staff is that's on PERS and has retirement and all that, you know, all that good stuff. And there's only, what, two patrol officers and myself. I mean, the current operating budget would would be able to.
Yes. The labor-intensive part of this is manning two gates 365 days a year, 24 hours a day.
Yep.
So that's what we have to reconcile. And okay. I don't know, even with technology, how much of that you can pare away. I mean, there will be perhaps segments of gate operation that are automated, but, you know, I don't know specifically where or how that would work. But that's only a small part of what is a normal 14-hour-a-day or 16-hour-a-day schedule where you have physical activity of significant proportions. So,
right. And then the other comments I had, I wanted to make a comment about the 4th of July before the July,
Brandon is canceling the 4th of July in further years.
Until further notice. It was a lot different this year, I feel, than last year. I mean, last year it was even on, I think, on a Friday. And then this year, with it being on a Saturday, it was just, for lack of terms, it was just stupid. The way that juveniles throughout the community were acting, they trashed the North Beach per usual, bottles of alcohol everywhere. I don't know how many kids try to say that they're going to beat me up, beat Chris up, beat Vitaly up. It was horrible. And all we're trying to do is just, you know, clear the party at the North Beach. We told the juveniles, like, hey, the sheriffs are coming. And, of course, the, you know, ones underage started, you know, started scattering. The ones that stay, they're like, well, can we stay here? I'm 21. I was like, well, if there's a juvenile around, there's alcohol involved. I mean, it's public intoxication for one. If you want to stay, go ahead. And then throughout the night, they responded to a call. And there's a illegal use of fireworks on the 14th hole in the golf course. And they responded to that. The kids ran away, retreated back to a residence. And some of the residents came out and were arguing with them, calling them a bunch of choice words, and one of them even brandished a firearm at them. So it's like, it was just a little bit ridiculous, and I feel like the community could do a little bit better when it comes to situations like this, because, I mean, the 4th of July, it's honestly meant as a community, you know, get together. Everybody should just be getting along. And then, of course, you know, you got the people calling our dispatch saying that we need to do something about this, we need to do this, and we need to do that. We're unarmed, for one. For two, I mean, I understand, you know, you pay taxes here, but your taxes aren't going to be costing us our lives either.
Yeah.
So I just kind of want to make that point out there. And I'm sure Chris had a good time on the 4th
of
July.
Yeah, and you know, I've seen probably more than 95% of the people that were at that event. And I've signed contracts for fireworks that I know are no longer $27,000, because that was the first one that I signed back in 1996, I think it was. And I've never seen that many carts and that many people. And you're right. And we've always been able to, we don't know quantitatively, but, you know, on Wednesday night, there's a lot less people than on Friday night. And then I think you hit the apex when it's on a three-day weekend. Friday's a holiday, and then Saturday's the 4th of July. It doesn't get any worse than that.
Yep.
But when they were leaving, and I haven't seen any, like, the after-action reports or any of that stuff. I mean, there were just people driving and going in numerous directions.
Yeah.
In all types of vehicles. I mean, there were carts going one way the wrong way, and there were carts that got onto the lakefront, you know, and that parked in there and then were trying to get out, and there were cars that were trying to get out, and there were people crossing the road in 100 different places. This is on Guadalupe, mm-hmm. you know. It was, and I don't know, I think one of the questions someone might ask when you critique it was the level of support, police support, security support, equal to that task? In other words, I mean, you know, we never know what the real number is, if it's 20,000, if there was 10,000, or whatever the number was. I've never seen it as large. That's just visually. I can't quantify that.
Yeah.
But I don't know if we're going to continue to do that, and the population is multiplying, which it is, then what is the appropriate level of support, and is it absolutely necessary at this point? And that's not the first 4th of July incident where a weapon has...
No, yeah, definitely.
I mean, and it's the worst of the days.
Yeah.
I mean, and we've had these incidents before. So I don't know. Is it... Every other fireworks display in the unincorporated or incorporated county, I'm sure, had a lot more police officers involved than we had.
Yeah, and we didn't have Sheriff's Department here this year to help us, huh?
We did not. There was one deputy for this whole area on shift that night, and he came in the morning to cover us, and he said, "Hey, I gotta go, I can't be here tonight, I'm this area, so if you need me, I'll be around." But whenever the gun was brandished, they were out on that murder in Rancho Cordova, so that's why he wasn't able to respond to the brandish.
And we weren't able to hire any off-duty officers?
Nope, we put in for it, we did everything we could, but nobody came, so...
But, you know, and I guess that's just a conversation that you guys could start and could extend into the RMA board is, okay, if you know that you're going to plan to the maximum event, within reason, you've just seen it. I mean, it was huge.
Yeah, we hired six extra security officers, and then actually eight total is what we went with, and then myself and CSD staff was all there. I was here until 3:30 that morning. I was here 5 a.m. to 3:30 a.m. for 4th of July. So it was a long day.
Yeah. So Yeah, I agree. It was a great event, and it got tremendous acclaim from the public. But you know, I think, you know, you get to a tipping point where maybe there's no balance anymore as to what kind of enforcement support you need versus the kind of crowd you anticipate.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a hard one.
Yeah.
And we're part of the consideration going forward is going to be, and Cooper's been out here, and we're you know, you're going to get one sheriff now all the time. I mean, they're $100 million down at the county budget wise, and they're gonna ding him just like they're gonna ding everybody else, and they're already squawking that, you know, and we're gonna, the unincorporated areas are gonna pay the price, and we, you know, I've never questioned the fact that when, well, we just had it, but when the word gun comes around, you know, we've usually had a pretty swift reaction. I mean, but other than that, I mean, anything to do with enforcement, like shoplifting or any of the other stuff that goes on now that we have a commercial center, a shopping center, we don't get any of that.
I think the biggest thing we noted was the mass exit after the parade of people walking out across the street. So how many people remain, non-residents came in. Hopefully once that north gate gets secured with the fencing and everything else, that'll help mitigate that or negate it. But I think that was the biggest thing, was outsiders getting in for the 4th of July.
Yeah, there's a couple of things going on there. And you know, I'm a trail rider, and I follow some of the blogs where you see now that, you know, we are no longer a well-kept secret that we've got, you know, 17 miles of active bike trails, and they're really cool and they're really beautiful and everybody wants to ride them, and oh yeah, if you park in the Bel Air, you know, all you have to do is, you don't come in your car, just park there, ride your bike in, and away you go. Yeah.
So I don't know how to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, and now it's all over the internet, so it's not a secret anymore.
Yeah. Last thing to that, I just wanted to say, too, collectively, between RMA and CSD, I think we did a good job for the 4th of July, as opposed to having traffic come in and working with the tools that we had. I just want to give a big shout-out to both our staffs and say thank you to everyone.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you very much.
I don't know. Is there any indication that the advance tickets are really taking hold and working? Well, you can get a pass. You get up to 5 passes.
For the most part, we did see a lot of use of that, of what was being distributed by RMA. The only thing to that is the accountability of it. There's not license plate being, you know, logged to that to that guest pass, so we'll never really.
You'll never know.
Yeah. So
these are guest passes.
They hand out special like red passes that they could get up to 5 from the RMA, the homeowners association. Yeah.
And that allows them to bypass the physical contact at the gate and go directly through by just wanting the barcode on the ticket.
Yeah, we put the lot number of the address they're going to on that. So they're supposed to put it up to where they see the lot number if we needed it. So we would just get that number and we'd know it's associated with that address. So
yeah.
If they flipped it over to the right side and we can see the numbers. But we were so busy we didn't get to do any of that. So. But yeah, the staff did a great job. The dispatchers did a great job. So we really appreciate the job well done.
Super. Yep. Okay, anything else?
That's it.
Great. Thank you, everybody. We're adjourned.